We are pressured by so many things. We need to think productivity, financial results, and customer service. There seems to be so little time left to deal with human relationships and the processes of behavior management. Yet the studies indicate that those leaders who are effective spend more time worrying about people growth and retooling than they do in focusing on only narrow work concerns. They understand that management is getting things done through other people to get performance, set the standards high, and get people to shape up so that they turn in winning performances. When groups of managers are asked to identify the kinds of problems which people present, a relatively long list emerges. It includes both specific behavioral difficulties as well as those problems which seem to be primarily attitudinal or motivational. What are the behavioral problems that most managers report? Well, they involve the person with a high lost time rate, the person who doesn't phone in to indicate he's not going to make a shift. It's the continually tardy employee, the employee who produces less or can't meet quality standards, the employee who drinks or does drugs. It's the employee with continued financial, legal, or personal problems, the employee who creates accidents or seems to have more than his or her fair share of accidents. It's the rule breaker, the person with no confidence. What are some of the motivational or attitudinal problems that members of management complain about? The insubordinate employee probably heads the list, or it can be the one who has the bad attitude. It's the employee who undermines the boss with a work group, the employee who damages group morale, the continually complaining employee, or the gossip monger who stirs up people, creating friction within the work group. In some cases, it's the stressed employee, or the employee suffering mental health problems. Sometimes it's an employee going through family trauma. In addition, at a recent seminar, supervisors listed the following problem types. There were the chronic complainers and the negative-minded, the lazy, apathetic, and pleasant-to-your-face unreliable employees, the time-wasters, bathroom-hiders, and lunch lizards. Problem employees include backstabbers, busybodies, and wedge drivers, employees with too many outside interests, those who are consistently rude and socially disruptive, the boss underminer, the change resistors, and the passive aggressives. The list is long and specific and a bit depressing to listen to. One survey revealed that between 4 to 11% of supervisors experienced problems in their department on a regular basis with employees who had deep personal or emotional problems, trouble living with the rules and regulations, or patterns of lateness or absence. And 33 to 51% of supervisors questioned said they saw these problems some of the time. So if you have a problem employee, you're not alone. My own experience in dealing with thousands of managers in corporate-sponsored programs on this topic suggests that about 90% of managers experience at least one problem employee at some time during each year. One employee assistance program found that the ratios of problem employee types that were referred to it broke down like this. 45% were alcoholics, 25% were dealing with mental health or stress problems, 13% were experiencing family difficulties, 7% were drug or substance abusers, a final 10% were a potpourri of problems, legal, financial, and so forth. These percentages may not hold up from company to company or from job class to job class, and it should be kept in mind that these cases were severe enough that they'd been referred to a corporate assistance program. Nonetheless, the figures are useful in suggesting that there are underlying patterns and groupings you can watch for. I think it's helpful in understanding the problem employee to pinpoint the important fact that we're dealing with approximately 10% of the workforce at any given moment in time. Another study suggests that as many as 20 to 25% of the workforce may be emotionally disturbed at any given time. The numbers are a little hard to pin down, because the problem is often a continuing cycle, with some people coming into a problem period while others are leaving it or the company. Also, work environments and job class differences vary, and these can influence the numbers of people who are affected, along with such items as how tolerant or supportive the corporate climate is. So the numbers move around a bit, but the bottom line is this. A majority of managers experience problems with a sizable minority of their employees, and this set of problems is rated by supervisors as among their most difficult to deal with. When asked to list the toughest tasks of management, managers, to no one's surprise, I'm sure, indicate that terminating someone for lack of performance is the toughest. The second toughest task most frequently mentioned is disciplining an employee, and the third most difficult, conducting a performance evaluation. There are other tough tasks, but it's interesting to note that the three most formidable jobs in management all surround this central question of how one deals with the problem person. How do you evaluate performance? How do you discipline? And if those two approaches don't work, how do you fire someone? This area of problem performance managing is one of the most difficult, most traumatic of management work. Let's narrow the definition. Earlier we stated that problem employees represent approximately 10% of the workforce at any given time. About half of the 10% are the hardcore group that will be difficult to save, and about half can be salvaged, turned around, or made to adapt. In some cases, those who are salvaged will go on to become almost heroic figures within the organization, true superachievers and performers, and even role models for other employees. In other cases, they can be brought back only to an average acceptability or adequacy level. Those remaining are the hard nuts that nobody seems to be able to crack. This program will help to salvage those who can be salvaged, and in some cases, it will give you some new ideas as to how to attack that hardcore group that very few can reach. I think it has to be understood at the outset that you're not going to salvage everyone. You're not going to get through to everybody. And you're going to be dealing with some deep set and perhaps permanently set behaviors. The employee's wife or husband might have been working on that problem behavior for 20 years. They haven't been able to change it, and it's doubtful that you're going to change it. The employee may have made a real effort to change what he or she represents and hasn't been able to do it either. We must recognize the fact that there are some people we're not going to be able to get through to, and those are the people who probably should be terminated from the organization. We'll talk about how to do that later on. First, it's important to distinguish between the problem employee and the problemed employee. Since troubles are an integral part of life, all employees will one day experience problems. There will be a financial problem, or a divorce, or the death of a loved one, and for a period of time, there is a dip in the employee's performance, or there is an unhappy person who seems to be snapping at everyone. Most managers learn that these short performance dips are temporary, and this individual will come back strong, again giving his typically fine performance. All employees are at one time or another problemed people. The appropriate course of treatment is to be supportive, be a counselor, a friend, be there to listen, and perhaps refer the person to other helpful sources inside or outside the organization. These people will bounce back and again resume their ability to contribute. But in the case of the truly problem person, we're dealing with someone whose problems seem more intense, deeper, and certainly longer lasting. We seem to see a continuing inappropriateness in what this person does and says. When the supervisor offers him support or reprimands or counsel, he finds that the employee doesn't seem able to respond. In this program, we are dealing primarily with the situation caused by the true problem employee and not simply a temporarily problemed person. So who's to blame? In considering what constitutes a problem employee, it's important to note that we are dealing with a problem cause or fault that rests primarily with the employee and not with the manager. In one study of employees who were brought to the attention of corporate personnel departments by their complaining managers, it was determined that about half the cases really reflected problem management rather than problem employees. That is, some supervisors would run off to the personnel department and use it as a club against the employee. The reality in the political world of organizational living is that if there is a conflict between employee and manager, the manager's greater power, status, and credibility can subvert or overrule the employee. It is a fact that managers can make employees look bad and appear responsible for problems that may be rooted in poor supervisory practices. One study found that about half the employees who were labeled as problem people by their managers were in fact the victims of a manager who had not provided adequate training, counseling, or written warnings. And so when there was difficulty with a particular employee, the employee tended to get blamed or fired. Every organization has to recognize the fact that not all of its managers walk on water, and even the best executives sometimes foul up their people dealings. This program makes no attempt to present all the knowledge that goes into good supervisory practice, so we're going to be talking about only those cases where the real trouble is with the employee. Why should we take action with these people? Well, I guess because they cost you so much. One employee assistance program administrator found that in his Fortune 500 company, the following costs are incurred by the problem employee. The problem employee typically has a lost time rate 6 times higher than the non-problem group and is a more frequent claimer on medical insurance. The problem employee is a more frequent and heavy user of workman's compensation. One insurance firm reported that the problem employee was 60% more likely to have an accident than an average employee, and that a first-time claimant had a 40% chance of repeating again. The problem employee has lower productivity. The average output of the problem person is about two-thirds that of the average employee. Problem employees are 4 times more likely to be alcoholic than employees who perform acceptably. And there are additional cost factors. Problem employees as a group are more likely to make poor decisions, and if corrective action isn't taken, they can increase the turnover among good employees who get fed up with their increasingly negative influence. A terrific cost is paid in terms of loss of group morale and loss of the group's respect for their manager. A lot has been written about the damage of the problem employee to group morale, but a factor that I've seen almost no mention of is the damage it does to management morale. Managers just get so frustrated and feel such a loss of confidence because they can't solve these problems that it starts to erode their sense of confidence and mastery in other aspects of the job. Leaders start to falter or start to feel that they are failing. That can't help but permeate the work unit. A very substantial amount of management time is invested in these people. Time that others need to deal with far more important problems, such as satisfying customer needs and improving product quality. While problem employees and problemed employees represent an estimated 10% of the workforce at any point in time, managers report that they will spend as much as 50% of their employee communication time in the work unit with these people. That means that the 90% of the people who are at least acceptable performers are only going to get 50% of the manager's communication time. And so the manager will feel guilty about not giving as much attention to the troops as he would like. Other costs include theft, sabotage, industrial espionage, and even loss of organization momentum, all caused by these problem employees. Other costs generated by the problem employee were detailed by a number of frustrated managers at a recent conference. Note how specific their list is and how it amplifies in greater detail some of the points we've already made.
Other workers become hostile toward the problem employee and become uncooperative.
Resources are wasted, projects take longer to complete, and executives become dissatisfied.
Complications result when decision-making, scheduling, and other procedures have to be arranged around the problem person.
Because of foul-ups, additional costs are created in other departments. This creates friction between the units.
Work standards erode and decline.
Customer relations are damaged.
less money is available to reward effective performers.
These and the other costs that problem employees generate can be estimated in terms of dollars of cost. Some can be accurately measured. In other cases, they can only be approximated. But if you add up all these confirmed costs and estimated costs, you might conclude, as one company did, that their small group of problem employees, estimated at 3%, cost them the payroll equivalent of 25%. That is, while they estimated their hardcore problem employee group at about 3% of the headcount and direct payroll, if you added up all the costs generated by that 3% of employees and expressed that total figure as a percent of payroll, it was equivalent to 25%. In other words, these people generate a cost to the organization that is out of all proportion to their membership. And the basic hard question that any manager has to answer is whether he or she can afford these people. Can you afford these people? Can you continue to live with the financial drag and the hassles they represent in your business? It's been my experience that most managers who really crystallize the question like that confront it. They come to the unpleasant conclusion that they have to clean house. They know they must no longer tolerate the sloppiness these people represent and the damage they inflict. Managers know they must move to damage control, to a containment of these costs. If you work in a larger organization, you may find that the cost of these problems is staggering, almost astronomical. General Motors has estimated that alcoholism alone costs it in excess of $62 million a year. Other organizations, while they may be motivated by the cost argument to take action, are also motivated by a remembrance of their own organizational mission and corporate values. Firms that are truly involved in the search for excellence know that they have a responsibility to their human resources to call them to a higher level of performance. They show employees how to reject standards that might have been tolerated in a less demanding era. We cannot have it both ways. We cannot be an excellent organization with mediocre people. We cannot be a strong and effective organization with weak and ineffective people. So a company's management must choose which it wants, excellence or slop. Our motivations are pure. We're not interested in hurting people or punishing people. We are interested in achieving worthwhile objectives. We are interested, too, and challenging people in such a way that they will want to change their behavior in order to go with us on an exciting and positive journey. When you're ready to proceed with an analysis of a particular problem case you're dealing with, complete the action plan for problem employee managing. You may want to complete this program first, but if you need the value of the action plan now, go to it. In summary, every manager is bound to have his fair share of problem employees. The lazy, the uncooperative, the emotionally unstable, the chronically late, the substance abusers. In short, workers who display one or more of a wide array of negative behaviors and attitudes. What are a manager's chances of having to deal with such an employee? An informed estimate puts the chances at about 9 out of 10. And how many employees typically fall into the problem categories? 10%, in my experience, of which about half are, with effective managerial leadership, potentially salvageable. The other half comprise the hardcore group that may ultimately resist even the most concerted rehabilitative efforts. In identifying problem employees, a couple of important distinctions must be made. The first is between the problem employee and the problemed employee, between the worker who habitually causes problems and the worker who happens to be experiencing pressures, stresses, or difficulties whose effects may be manifested in a temporary display of negative behavior or attitudes. Determining whether the troublemaker is a problem employee or a problemed employee will significantly affect how the manager confronts the issue. The second distinction that must be made involves correctly identifying the source of the problems. Some problem employee cases, upon closer examination, disclose underlying supervisory or managerial shortcomings. The root cause must be accurately assessed before the trouble can be effectively managed. The costs of problem employees include lower productivity, higher lost time rates, increased use of workers' compensation, disproportionate demands on managerial time, damaged morale that can ultimately increase turnover, and on and on. What it all boils down to is dollars and cents and standards. It is, in fact, possible for a firm's management to develop a good ballpark estimate of the financial drain caused by its misfit workers. The shock of this bottom line figure is what very often prompts management to undertake a concerted damage control effort.